Welcome to the Nerd and Ty Godzilla special. A special episode dedicated to a movie so large that it's making fur slowly die. I don't know what the heck's going on. I'm Trey Dorn. Joining me, as always, are Professor Fursters. And the ever grumpy yet stupefied Nick Izumi.
Jet Jagar.
I just realized something. No matter what episode we're doing, regardless of what it is, regardless of who's doing the intro, Nick is always introduced last. Because I always introduce Fur first, then Nick. Fur always introduces me first, then Nick. And then Nick always introduces himself last.
That's because I'm humble.
Nick, can you give me that Jet Jagar again?
Jet Jagar.
Your mother never really loved him.
There we go.
So, coming to you live from nerdatoriums across the country. Well, we're not really live because you're listening to this as a recorded, pre-recorded right. MP3. But think of it like we're doing this right now in your head. Like, we're actually physically inside your head. We all went out and saw Godzilla this last weekend.
Boy, did we ever.
And our opinions are so big, we can't fit it into the regular 10 minutes that we'd normally dedicate to a film like this in the podcast.
Why would we want to, honestly?
Because of Nazis.
We're not even 5 minutes in and we've already hit Godwin's Law.
No, I'm saying that's why we wouldn't, as if it, like, involved Nazis.
Oh, gotcha. Godzilla had Nazis in it.
Yeah, no, if there were Nazis in Godzilla, we wouldn't talk about it at all, and we would pretend it never happened.
It's true.
Jean Reno's secretly a Nazi, right?
There have been any Nazis in Godzilla. Now,
I was about to ask, like, I don't
Kamen Rider had a lot of Nazis, but Godzilla? No.
So, anyways, Godzilla, guys, it finally came out after about a year of people of build up to it. It finally came out.
So I around the round table here, I went out and saw it at a drive-in, and I loved it.
I saw it at a crappy movie theater in Janesville, and I'm okay with it.
I saw it with friend of the show, one of the Otaku Tonight Sappers, again.
My con daughter.
Yes, your con daughter. We went and saw it at the MyCon Cinema in Chippewa Falls, which is a lovely theater. I recommend it to everybody.
As opposed to going to the MyCon drive-in in Eau Claire.
Again, I had free tickets, which turned out to not end up actually being free. Like, I gave them my free tickets, and they were like, oh, yeah, we're not taking discounts or passes for this movie. So, again, being the kind-hearted soul that she is like, I got this.
Yeah, well, I could have told you that first-run movies never work with those free coupons.
Always, like, because these are from the radio station where I occasionally work, so they normally work. I don't know what it was with this one.
Well, it's because it was opening weekend for a huge film. Usually you got to wait for the second weekend to use the passes.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just, you know, movie theater life, man.
But, where do we want to start with this? I mean, like, there's a lot to talk about.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It has exactly the same plot as Gamera, Guardian of the Universe, except there isn't a psychic in it.
You know, I haven't
seen Gamera, Guardian of the Universe.
One of the comments that I made to Gen when we were watching the movie, I'm like, are we going to get a psychic showing up at some point in the next 20 minutes?
Yeah, Raina said the same thing to me.
I've watched all the original Gamera films, but I haven't seen, like, the later ones.
See, it's pretty much like the plot for this Godzilla is very similar. And for Guardians of the Universe, for those who haven't seen it yet, what it is Gauss shows up and starts attacking everything.
It's what Gauss does.
What Gauss does. And what ends up happening is that there's this little girl that has like an ancient ruin that she holds onto, and she's awakens Gamera, and Gamera shows up, and she can feel his pain, and he can feel her pain, and
it In more general
terms... That sounds really dumb.
In more general terms, scientists find this find random-ass monster. They're curious about random-ass monster until random-ass monster starts attacking things. Another larger, more reptilian-looking monster shows up, and everyone's like, is that going to start attacking things too? And it turns out the reptilian monster's only beef is with the other monster.
Which is... Did we describe Gamera, Guardian of the Universe, or this new Godzilla? You make the call.
I'm sure there's some other kaiju movie that follows that formula.
There's a lot to do.
There's a lot. It's
well,
it's very generic that way.
Yeah, and I think we should be really clear going forward that this is going to be full of spoilers. If you don't want spoilers for Godzilla, just turn off the podcast.
Yeah,
just end turn it off. Skip this episode entirely.
Let's start from the beginning of the movie. With the spoiler warning out of the way, so now we can really get into the meat of it. I think that opening sequence was that not really super cool.
I really liked the opening credits, and I liked Bryan Cranston's character. Like, I really felt his pain. Like,
yeah,
I loved Optimus Primal.
Optimus Primal.
Well, he was there, man. Didn't you notice the other white guy at the in the control room at the reactor was Gary Chalk.
I don't know what Gary Chalk looks like these days.
Gary Chalk looks exactly like Gary Chalk has always looked. If you watch like enough Vancouver-based science fiction, you know what Gary Chalk looks like. He played a recurring Russian colonel on Stargate SG-1 also. And he sounds like Optimus Primal when he talks.
But, that honestly didn't.
How can you guys not know what Gary Chalk looks like?
I just don't do a lot of Gary Chalk watching. I guess I don't.
I've never watched anything that he was actually on screen in.
I will say my least favorite part of the opening credits was seeing Aaron Taylor Johnson's name.
Was he the guy who played the son? Or
yes.
Okay, he was the worst thing in this movie.
He played Ford and then whatever his last name was.
Yeah, he had all of the emotional range of a piece of white bread.
Well, no, okay, I think he was fine. It's true that his character often had the neutral mask as kind of a default, but honestly, that was really kind of what you expect for any person in that situation.
Yeah,
I mean, if you really look at it, he's the guy who the world kept shitting on over those days. I mean, it's like his dad dies, then he tries to fly home and he can't. Like, it's like the list of like shit that keeps happening to this guy. Like, I'm sorry, I would just have a dead expression on my face the whole time too.
I just had a hard time with how. I didn't care about him. Like, I didn't care about anything that Aaron Taylor Johnson does in this movie.
No, I was right with you.
That's because I think that's just I understand the criticism, and it's true that like the biggest weakness of this film is that the characters were shallow.
The main character was shallow. I had no problem with Ken Watanabe or Bryan Cranston's character.
Right. Sure. But let me say, like, there is a choice there that's done on purpose, where the attempt is that by having a more neutral main character, and this is the entire secret behind the success of the first Matrix, is that with Keanu Reeves' blankness, is that the idea is that it's easier for the viewer to put themselves in the character's place. When a more neutral, like, and that's the term the neutral mask comes from, and it's whether or not you personally like it or not, I think it's a legitimate choice.
It didn't work for me. I can say that much.
Yeah.
It worked very well for me, so that's why
it worked for me to a point. But then it gets to a point in the movie where like, am I serious? Like, suspension of disbelief can only go so far in a kaiju movie, right? Where it's just like, are you telling me that this guy's at every single fucking main point of this movie? I mean, everything just happened to fall into place where he was, and I had a little bit of issue with that.
So something else that kind of just bothered me about his character is that spend the big part of the beginning part of the movie is setting up. Normally, in the first act of the movie, that's when you set up your character arcs, correct?
Yep.
And the problem is that the main character arc that they spend all that time setting up is resolved within the first act.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston's like, dead by the end of the first.
Well, he Mark Hamill'd this film. He was totally the Mark Hamill of this movie.
I don't think he grew at all after that point. He's the same person from that after his dad dies. He has no growth.
Well, okay. Right, but as I say, Bryan Cranston's very much the Mark Hamill of the film. If you don't understand my reference, it's because Mark Hamill appeared in a bunch of B science fiction movies in the mid-90s to early 2000s.
Laserhawk.
Laserhawk and The Giver are the two best examples. And by The Giver, I mean the American adaptation of The Giver, the live action, where Mark Hamill is billed as the star.
He's in it for 20 minutes.
He's in all the promotions, and he's in the movie for like less than a third of the film, and he dies every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's Bryan Cranston, Mark Hamill, this film.
They did the same thing with... I don't want to get too off track. The shame was, though, like, Cranston, when he was on screen, he was selling it. Like, when he turns into the kaiju truther, or whatever you want to call it, and he's freaking out at the people working for Project Monarch, he was great. But...
Oh, he was great in everything he was doing.
Yeah.
Like, best character in the movie, I thought, other than Godzilla.
But the only real character arcs get resolved within that first act, so... And...
This is not a film about building characters. This is a film about what the experience of trying to survive an attack like this is.
See,
you know, it's...
And I think that's why I don't like the comparisons people are trying to draw between this and the 54 Godzilla, because that was a very character-driven movie. And this is not.
But it depends also, though, on what you're looking for. Actually, I did sit down and watch the 54 Godzilla movie today.
I just rewatched King of the Monsters today, too.
Not King of the Monsters.
I've never seen King of the Monsters.
It's bad.
I have now only seen the original Godzilla. And I think that the most powerful part of that movie were the echoes of... And I know it's cliche to say this, but the echoes of the horrors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
And that scene was what... Like, I let out like kind of a gasp at that scene in this movie where Ken Watanabe's character Serizawa pulls out the watch as they're discussing nuking the city of San Francisco to save everybody, and he's like, eh.
But if you look at the visuals of Godzilla, a lot of that echoes a lot of the newsreel footage that existed at the time of the aftermath of the bomb.
Yep,
and that was very much in the visual. And what I got. And in kind of a similar tone to a lot of this film, I'm like 9 years older than you guys, so
at least
a lot of this film reminded me of to not get like super cliche, but like the way I personally felt on 9/11. Like the experiences like where people are like the desperate trying to call, because I had friends in New York. Like I have a friend who literally lived in Manhattan when it happened. My aunt worked in the Pentagon regularly, so like spending that whole day desperately trying to call family, and the visuals of the rubble in the city, and because I watched that happen live at work. Like I was at my job, and so that's like a lot of it. Like, you know, I know that offline, before we started, like, recording this, I know, Nick, you said that you never felt like things had a moment to breathe, but I really felt like, you know, what would happen was is that something huge would happen, and then you'd have, like, barely a breath before the next thing happened, and that's what, like, it really brought back memories to me of, like, the emotional resonance of that day when, you know, when that second plane hits, when you're still reeling from the first, or when the building started to fall. I know it's a little, you know, it sounds, you know, cheap to go to 9/11 for me to say that, but that's, like, I know as an adult who watched that live and was concerned about, like, specific loved ones, that hit hard for me. And I can only imagine how this film is going to impact people in Japan with the tsunami stuff that's like built in throughout the film.
I kind of wish it would have gone. I kind of wish if they wanted to go for that effect, though, that they would have gone a little bit like harder hitting. And I know that sounds really cruel, but like, every time there was any moment where I had to worry about people, it always worked out hunky dory. Like, Ford Toast, whatever his name is, when he finds that kid on the train, I was expecting the kid to not find his parents, and that would have been a really powerful way to show how much damage these kaiju are doing. But no, as soon as they get off the train, they instantaneously find these parents. It's like, oh.
Yeah, I do wish they'd been a little harsher in that. Like, I wish that some of the people we'd spent more time with, I mean, besides army guys, you know, because army guys died like crazy in this.
Like, they dropped like flies.
Yeah.
The whole battalion was wiped out on that train, on that
bridge.
But I wish, ever.
Like, there are plenty of anonymous people who get killed in this film, but I really wish that, like, maybe some more of the people who were given time with, like, you know, I know it's gonna be horrible, but I kind of wish the little kid had died.
I actually thought the kid on the train.
Yeah, I
thought his son might have actually, like, there's the one scene. I mean, like, where the moment to breathe thing. I mean, the bridge is an example of that too. Where they're getting everybody out, and I mean, you know, lots of people die on the bridge because, yeah, the one bus that they're focused on gets across, and a couple other vehicles get across too. But there are thousands of other vehicles that are still on the other side of that bridge, and there are hundreds of vehicles that are in that section of the bridge that collapses, and you know they don't make it out.
Right, but I know that's good. I just wish we'd spent some time with the people who didn't make it.
That's what I'm talking about.
Would build the emotional impact.
That's where I feel in that level the film doesn't work for me, because when it tries to do horror or shock, it doesn't have enough gumption to follow through with it. But then it's also taking itself too seriously to be like cheesy and fun. So.
See, it's I think it partially succeeded on that. Like, I think that the train scene was especially effective, where the power comes up on the train, on the automatic train, and they are headed straight towards the monster.
Yep, that was an oh shit moment.
No, that was,
and you know, most of the people on that train died.
Like, the thing is, I don't actually hate this movie. There are a lot of problems with it, and I don't.
And we have time to talk about it tonight.
What I love is the incompetence of the U.S. military always throughout the entirety of this film. Literally everything, like, I'm sorry, almost everything the humans do in this entire film from beginning to end makes things worse. The only thing the humans did right was when Ford burns the eggs, which was an afterthought, and... Which does help Godzilla by distracting one of the two Mutos, and that's it. Everything else, like, anytime they do something else right, it's merely cover, like, getting rid of the bomb was covering up a human fuck up.
Yeah, like, no, my favorite was like, yeah, let's put this on a goddamn train.
yeah, put
it on a train.
Give the Mutos one of those sushi, like those sushi trains that you see. Like, now they have a smorgasbord.
Let's drive the bomb right into the middle of the city. That's, like, you can't divert. You can't at least go around the city.
There were several Transformers moments where people just made horrendously terrible decisions.
The whole thing is that it was so believable that we would be that stupid. Like,
well, George Carlin always had a joke. He always said, jumbo shrimp is one of my... That word doesn't make any sense. It's an oxymoron, just like military intelligence.
Yeah, no, it's... Like, that was... I thought that the humans fucking up everything was the most believable part of the film.
I just wish we could have spent less time with army guys. Because this has become a theme that we see a lot in movies, though, is that military higher-ups make terrible decisions, but we always have to cheer for... The army guys who we spent so much of our time with, they did that in Superman, they do that in Transformers.
But don't we cheer for the army guys in every kaiju movie?
No.
Not always, but the thing is, like...
quite often I don't, because they...
When one of the main characters is in the military, you have to at least sort of have a little bit of yourself in his corner.
But more often than not, the military gets brought in to attack the kaiju you're supposed to be cheering for, so you don't like them either.
Right, well, that's true, but I mean, it's just like, in this case, you know, Yeah, I didn't think that the military was overused. In fact, if anything, you know, I will say the one funny thing was how many damn Canadians apparently are in the U.S. military.
Again with your Canadian actors.
You know what was really funny, though?
So
Could someone, and I don't know if any of our listeners in the Navy could help me out with this one. Why do you need to wear camo on a ship? Like, when you're on the bridge of the ship, why do you need to wear camo?
It's just their uniform.
That just what we do now? Because really silly.
No, it is, but yeah, no, that's their uniform. Silly.
Yeah.
That's their on the battlefield uniform.
The one thing that kept taking me out of this film, though, was, again, as I said, all the Canadian... Like, I knew it was shot in Vancouver before I looked it up. Because I was like, oh, look, it's the lead guy from Alphas. Oh, look, it was Benny from Supernatural. Oh, look, it's the lieutenant from Continuum. Oh, look, it's, like, I didn't have a single there wasn't a single scene in that entire film where I didn't go, hey, it's that guy. And it was just this list of Canadian actors, like, up and down the wall. And I watched so much science fiction programming that's shot in Vancouver that it's almost impossible for me not to notice them. So, like, that took me out of the movie a little bit. You know, it's like, well, I mean, that and going, hey, look, he's married to the Scarlet Witch.
I didn't he think was. His He's family was interesting. Witch.
Well, you know, she was the least interesting Olsen sister.
Oh, great. I didn't know that.
is true.
But Mary-Kate and Ashley are her older sisters, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
You didn't know that?
What a great person that I'm sad didn't get more screen time. I loved every time Ken Watanabe had anything to say.
Well, of course, he's Ken Watanabe.
I loved it. Like,
phone book and make it interesting.
I know we even got, like, despite the fact that he looked perpetually tired and pissed off, he looked tired
and concerned. That was the best part about his character.
Well, his part in the movie was beat Japanese guy who knows about monsters.
But, I mean, like, I know we saw in the trailer.
Part in the movie was be Japanese guy who's tired of all your bullshit.
But I think the first time I stood up and, like, I cheered and raised my hands and was like, fuck yeah, in this movie, when he was like, you know, nature has a way of sorting things out. Let them fight. I'm like, yeah, I like this idea.
I sure wish they would have taken that advice, or at least shown that advice on screen.
And okay, Nick.
They did show it.
I know that we didn't see a whole lot of the kaiju fighting. Like, there are parts that really pissed me off, like where they're ushering people into the subway undergrounds, and you see the male Muto come flying in at Godzilla, and Godzilla grabs it out of the air, and you're like, oh yeah, fuck yeah, they're gonna fight. And then the door closes, and you're like, oh, cock tease.
The scene in Hawaii
but I liked that.
I did too. But, like, oh, but I did, we you need I did. To, like, the whole movie, as much as I'd love for it to be all about Godzilla, it can't be entirely just the
I'm not
kaiju
asking
fighting.
It to be entirely about Godzilla, but it's a 2-hour and 20-minute movie.
Right, but you see,
and
it's
Godzilla's
like those moments,
a fifth wheel,
like,
to this plot.
It's for me. I disagree completely. I felt that by showing the monsters less in those moments, it made them scarier.
But that's...
it made them better. It made the more you show Godzilla, the less cool he looks, because they made him look like Godzilla. Everybody's favorite gray beastie that people think is green.
But everyone already knows what Godzilla looks like, so why keep it a secret? That's stupid.
Because then it's scarier in small moments.
Because
Godzilla was only in the original movie for 17 minutes.
And that movie is 96 minutes long. It's a pretty good portion of a 96-minute movie, especially a 96-minute movie where every scene, even when he's not on screen, is about how do you deal with Godzilla? What is Godzilla? Where is he coming from? Look at how many people were killed by Godzilla. This movie is about Mutos and how to deal with Mutos, and Godzilla just happens to show up to fix the problem.
Well, okay, so, and I think the secret there is that a desperate need to distance themselves from Godzilla in 1998. They specifically wanted to make sure that it was Godzilla fighting something else.
But this was Godzilla 98. It just had a second monster in it.
Nothing can be as bad as Godzilla 98. As we say this,
please allow me to finish my sentence. But I was going to say that they wanted the distance, so they had to make him be against another monster, which means that the other monster has to be the larger threat, because we all know that Godzilla has to be the good guy in any fight like that because of the ways Toho likes it. So we were left with this because of that. And I think it worked fine. Yeah. But to get mad at them because they didn't want to do a Godzilla versus the military movie is... I
didn't want a Godzilla versus the military movie. I prefer Godzilla versus another monster movies. But when you have scenes that are infuriating, like the Hawaii scene where they set up for a Godzilla fight, they show him roaring, and then they cut away and don't even bother to explain why the monster fight broke up or how Mal Muto got away, that's just lazy.
They did show it, though. They showed the Mal Muto flying off on the TV where our Ford's kid is watching it.
Yeah.
Where he's like, "Mommy, look at dinosaurs." And the last shot you see is of Godzilla going back into the ocean.
I did not like the way that was set up. I'm getting very defensive, and I apologize for that, but I do feel words are being put in my mouth. I never said I wanted a Godzilla versus the military movie. I did not say I wanted Godzilla in 98.
Okay.
I do want to say, though, the thing about not seeing Godzilla until the huge fight until the very end, the scene where they're doing the Halo drop, I think would have lost its impact if you had had Godzilla on the screen for an extended period of time before that, because that was the first moment of holy shit, look at how big this monster is, when they're dropping in and they are 100 meters away from Godzilla and he's still fucking enormous.
Yeah, I will say the reason why I like that fight in Hawaii was actually because it, and I'm going to bring up 9/11 again, is because it reminded me of watching the news after, like, because you spent the whole damn day watching the news about what happened in New York, and so it's like, I don't know, that actually, like, I really liked the way that they handled that, because it wasn't going to be the final fight, so we didn't need it to, like, sit on the screen and, like, you know, be the big climactic battle. It was, but it helped, you know, bring us into the world, and I don't know, that's just me.
I just would have liked to have established what Godzilla's part in the story was, because he really is just this thing that they talk about, but he's not an entity until that final part of the movie. I did not feel his presence throughout the entire thing. I just know they kept cutting back to him.
I understood him, at least from the little bit of Ken Watanabe, which I thought it was really ridiculous when he runs out on the deck of the carrier and he brings up the binoculars. I'm like, really, dude, you're going to use binoculars to look at this thing that's like 70 meters out. And it's, and it's three times bigger than any skyscraper in New York City. But I mean, like, yeah. I had understood it at that point is that he existed to be the alpha hunter.
Well, okay, so what I love about Godzilla is that his motivation is not Godzilla as a creature in that film. If you really break it down, he feeds on radiation, so do the Mutos, and the Mutos are breeding, and the whole reason that Godzilla sits at the bottom of the ocean is to absorb radiation from the Earth because there's so little radiation left. Godzilla's killing them not to feed, not to help anyone, but to stop a competitor for his food source.
Yeah, but it seemed like he was defending those kids on the bridge. That was the way I read it. But
yeah, well, Godzilla's a friend to all children in this one.
That's the other weird thing, is that Godzilla's personality, like, he felt a lot more like the creatures that fight Godzilla in GMK from the early 2000s more than any previous version of Godzilla, which is fine. Because Godzilla has more personalities and origins than Batman, but
he was...
Yeah, I was going to say.
He was definitely in full-on good guy mode in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, the Millennium films alone offer a separate continuity for every single film.
Except for the two Mechagodzilla movies. Those are interconnected.
Yeah, I was going to say,
read...
apparently...
An article today about what makes this Godzilla great. And kind of going on that, this Godzilla is very reptile-like. Like, if you take a turtle, for example, and you offer it food, it is going to get that food. It is not going to care what else is going on.
Especially if it's pizza.
Whatever can be going on, but it's going to focus on its food source. And which explains, and reptiles have personalities and stuff, and I could really feel this Godzilla's personality coming through.
Like, he was great when he was on screen. Don't get me wrong. That was great.
I just, there's that great scene where he's, I just like the whole thing about, oh, he's down, and I actually thought I thought he was dead for a minute, but oh no, I'm just taking a power nap like the badass.
I'm going to be honest, I would have been furious if they would have killed Godzilla at the end of this movie. He hasn't had a movie in 10 years.
That was never going to happen.
Kill him? No. I would have been really upset.
Yeah, if we wanted to watch Godzilla die, we'd watch the original film. But, no, you know what? I know that I've heard, like, people make fun of this scene, but can I just say, like, am I apparently the only person who thought it was really awesome that the two mutos nuzzled each other when, like,
I thought it was adorable, and I did not.
Like, I thought it was cute.
I thought it was adorable.
I thought it was awesome, but let me tell you why I thought it was awesome. Because it just showed that these were just two giant animals that were just, you know, they didn't care about the humans. They weren't maliciously necessarily going after the humans per se. They were just in the way. Like when we swat at flies or step on ants. Like, you know, it's not that these were large malevolent beings. It's that they were large animals that didn't give two craps about us. They weren't evil. They were just large and uncontrollable. And that's why I liked it.
That's how
I kind of wish they would have explored that angle more, like maybe even have characters having like a recognizing that and asking if it's like even ethical to kill such a creature. And we've had that in older Godzilla movies several times.
Yeah. Speaking of killing,
I just think we'd end up with a 4-hour movie if we had all those conversations. Yeah.
Those movies are like 70 minutes long, though.
Speaking of killing the creatures.
And a lot of them are boring.
let's talk the fights in this movie. Like we've talked the themes and whatnot. Let's talk like the just gritty monsters having it out on screen moments.
Hell yes, is my response. Everyone knows the one money shot, but for me, Godzilla's tail whip was one of the most satisfying things in that entire movie.
It was cool, but it wasn't hold the Muto's mouth open and fire atomic breath right down its gut. And then not only that, but like Godzilla's triumphant, like hold up the head and throw it on the ground thing. Like, yes.
Spike the football.
I think me and Gen were like there were a couple other people in this movie that were like super hardcore Godzilla fans. We were the ones that were cheering along with everything. I think I heard somebody yell finish him the minute like Godzilla opened the mouth and he knew what was going to happen.
So I didn't hear other people because it was a little cold. That it was cold Saturday night when I saw the drive-in, so our windows were rolled up. So you know we didn't hear the other audience members. But
I mean, like the fight scenes in this were incredible. Awesome. I mean, you could feel the scale of it.
The fight scene was incredible.
There were a couple. Nick, come on.
And the scary scenes that weren't necessarily direct monster fights involving the monsters were pretty great too. Like, again, the train scene. I go back to that's my favorite scene in the whole movie, is the train scene. Not the military train, the automatic train in Hawaii, I should say. Not to be confused with the flaming train where Ford Mr. My Life is Hell is the only survivor.
Again, like, just like, wow, we just happened to land at the exact point where everything else landed. That's great.
Well, it's because without that, there's not a lot of you could do with a human character unless the human character manages to survive.
The plot shouldn't happen for the sake of the plot, though. That's just hack.
Well, no, but I felt it was believable because he was a bomb tech, and so the only real stretch at any point in his story was him surviving that the flaming train scene.
How about him?
Like that one was.
I don't know them being able to pull him away from that nuclear device. Like, with perfect time and him not going blind, staring
straight
at him.
Yeah, we had 5.5 minutes left on that clock when the helicopter showed up. Like, you cannot, like...
That is one fast helicopter.
Yeah, like, I could not believe... That was, like, the least
believable. I agree, that was a little...
Can I bring up this...
I was wishing he died!
This is something that it's not just a this movie thing. This is kind of a bigger problem that I'm having with American movies right now, and it's bothering me more because it keeps happening in movies I like.
How did Batman get away from the nuke?
Well, specifically, when did we become so desensitized to how much damage and the weight of using nuclear weapons?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Because, like, we keep doing this, and it's really starting to make me really uncomfortable, especially in a Godzilla movie.
Like, no, yeah. I kept thinking that, too. It's just, like, we just detonated a nuke several miles off the coast of San Francisco. There's going to be repercussions for this.
Yeah, that boat wasn't going fast enough for... Even if it went fast enough that the fallout doesn't hit shore, like, that part of the ocean...
Yeah, but, no, it's dead for years.
Yeah, there's no... I really wish... Like, I just...
Why did he stay on the boat?
That is another excellent question.
He wasn't driving it. Why didn't he just get off the boat right away?
That's what I thought they were going to do.
The same thing.
Because it's not like he steered the boat. He just lay there. And it was clear he was going to try to disarm it one last time. But after you know you can't disarm it, I'd be like, in the water. Fuck it.
See, I'm going to
die with my pants on.
Let's just agree that the
Ford's a moron.
Ford is a moron, and the science is bad in this movie. I mean, it's awful. I mean, I don't think there's a single person in Hollywood that actually knows how an EMP works.
Yeah. No. that said, I did like the Mutos themselves. I don't know.
Oh, I thought they looked nice and scary.
The design was very nice, and having the male and the female ones be distinctly different.
Yeah, the sexual dimorphism was awesome in it. That was a cool.
Yeah, no, I agree completely.
A cool little add-on.
I will say,
I think.
If you ever want to make my wife uncomfortable, make something look like a spider.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm probably Everyone knows I mentioned it on the show. I'm a toy collector. Even with all of my problems with this movie, I'm probably going to buy toys of the Mutos. I like them. They'll look good with my other kaiju.
I think so.
I will say, I think this is the best American scary kaiju movie ever made.
It's
you don't have a whole lot of competition with Godzilla 98 and King Kong, but, you know, still.
That's, well, you know, I think a King Kong deserves some credit. That's a kaiju movie.
Well, yeah.
Hell, he became
a
Toho character.
I do think it deserves some credit. I know. I've seen Godzilla versus King Kong several times. Who hasn't seen Godzilla vs. King?
Well, like, I was talking about King Kong Escapes, the one before that. That one's awesome. It has Gorosaurus and Mecha Kong. And a guy named Doctor Who.
I think I need to see that.
His name is actually Doctor Who. It's one of the greatest things Ishiro Honda ever directed that no one cares about.
Wow. See, it's like my kaiju like viewing is not as complete as say yours, you know.
Yeah, Nick is like the doctor at Godzilla movies here.
Like I've seen all the original Gamera films except one, and I have that one on DVD, and I'm gonna watch it. But I've not seen any of the Gamera remakes. I've seen random King Godzilla movies. Like I've seen Godzilla versus King Kong. I've seen random films out of various eras of Godzilla. I hadn't watched the original Godzilla until this morning.
There's an interesting kind of I don't want to call it a social experiment because I haven't really been running that, but something I have noticed is that the people who I know who are really, like, the big, hardcore Godzilla people. Like, the people who put me to shame. And I know quite a few of those. I've noticed, like, the really hardcore Godzilla fans weren't super blown away by this movie. And I don't know if that's just something about them or us, maybe, I would say. But
I think there's a degree of expectation. Like, maybe they're going in with higher expectations than I am.
I went into it with the expectation that we're going to see giant monsters beating the crap out of each other on screen for a little bit.
I was going to say, like, I also knew that he wasn't going to show up until an hour into the movie.
Like, I knew that. I'm fine with that. But
right. Right, no, but what I'm saying, though, is that some of the people who might not have been as happy with the film might not have known that. And I'm not talking about people like you, Nick, who, where you liked the film, you just have some massive issues with it. You know, I'm talking about the people who are more negative than that.
Like, there's a certain amount of it that's just, it felt really like it wanted to fall into the joyless, bleak remakes that we get these days. And I've seen far worse, but I think because just with years of Godzilla fandom, I mean, I can count on my fingers how many of the Godzilla films I haven't seen. I was kind of underwhelmed by this, and I hold the Godzilla movies to a really high standard, unless I'm watching Megalon, in which case I'm laughing hysterically for about 70 minutes. So,
or the Son of Godzilla.
Son of Godzilla.
I do know that what they were... I do know what they were trying to do was capture the feeling of the original 1954 Godzilla. Whether or not they succeeded is, you know, obviously we've been debating, but like that was their intention.
I think they made a good movie, but I think they failed if they wanted to do the. I think remaking the original is a terrible idea in the first place, but I don't think they did a good job.
Well, they didn't make, but yeah, it's. I mean. I think that nothing is going to have the impact of the Atomic Monster 9 years after the bomb dropped. You know what I mean? Nothing can be as emotionally resonant as the original Godzilla. I think that said, I think that in capturing a film of that kind of tone, that they made a decent film. An imperfect film, but a decent film, and one definitely worthy of the name Godzilla.
I won't argue with that. I just, the whole, like, I feel like they could have made it, if they wanted to go for that scary feel, I feel like they didn't have the gumption to go all the way and actually make it that aggressively upsetting. Because I find the original 54 Godzilla to be an incredibly upsetting movie. I can't watch that just because I feel like watching a movie, because it hurts me to watch, but it's a great movie.
Yeah.
And I think that is the of all the movies to try to recapture the magic, I think that's the one that you just would be a terrible one to try to recapture. I do think this movie does remind me of some of the, its strong points remind me of Mothra versus Godzilla and Ghidorah Three-Headed Monster, which are two movies I really like. Mm-hmm. Not as good as those. But it reminds me of them.
Okay. See, the problem is I haven't seen those two films, so I can't make a, you know, I can't to say whether or not I think they're better or not, because, again, I have not seen them.
But regardless of our opinions on it, it was announced yesterday, actually, that Godzilla is going to be getting a sequel. It's already been greenlit. So...
Well, I'm excited about that. I just hope they, you know,
I hope they made enough money to license another Toho monster. I would like to see Godzilla versus Mothra or something like that in the next Godzilla movie.
I'm worried about, the thing is with how they've already established this version of Godzilla, Mothra, unless they really wanted to annoy the fans, like this Godzilla's personality is so similar to Mothra's that it would be kind of redundant to have her there. Like,
yeah.
Someone suggested tying in Pacific Rim 2 with Godzilla 2, and then I got excited.
Well, Guillermo del Toro made that joke.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, Guillermo del Toro is the one who said he'd love to see a Pacific Rim Godzilla crossover, but I don't see that working.
It wouldn't, not with the continuity we've established in the two movies, it wouldn't make any sense.
It's I really get kind of weirded out when people try to compare this movie to Pacific Rim.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of that.
It's like comparing, like, I know that, like, this is not the caliber, you know, like, I'm not going to claim that it's of the artistic caliber of the original Godzilla, but it's like trying to compare the original Godzilla to Ultraman. Like, it's, these are different categories of film. You know, just because there's a giant monster in it doesn't mean it. Just because there's a kaiju doesn't make it the same genre. You know, it's, you know, even in Godzilla films, there's multiple genres. Because I wouldn't compare Godzilla 54 to Final Wars.
You should never. Honestly, Godzilla 54 shouldn't be compared to anything else in the franchise.
No, because
it's just too different.
Yeah.
And if there's a reason why the other movies in the franchise are different from 54 is because you can't make a franchise of movies like 54. It's just too depressing and too artsy to make an entire series like that.
Then here, I wouldn't compare the original Gamera to Ultraman. There. Let's eliminate the artsiness, okay? But, like, you know, it's where, you know, you wouldn't take a movie that, because the original Gamera, while, you know, does have the little kid, was meant to be scary. It doesn't necessarily succeed on all those levels, but it was trying to be scary. Like, I wouldn't compare that film to, like, an Ultraman or even, like, Godzilla Final Wars. Like, it's a different genre of kaiju films.
I think that might also be what made it not click in my head, is because it felt like they wanted to go scary, but at the same time they were drawing so much from the Godzilla versus movies that I was like, those are usually kind of lighthearted. This is weird. And the one time they tried, there have been a couple times where they've done scary as hell ones where it's been a versus series. Godzilla, Mothra, and King Ghidorah, I recommend to everyone because it's a goddamn perfect movie, but because it is, it's a goddamn perfect movie, and it has Baragon, and Baragon needs more love.
Are you eating?
I don't know what's happening.
Who's eating?
Suddenly I'm hearing munching noises.
Who's eating?
That's not me. That's Nick.
Nick, did you bring enough for me and Trey?
I didn't. I'm sorry.
Wow.
But yeah, no, I was gonna say, you know, it's like to just bring up Pacific Rim, the greatest film of last year, as we all agree.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't like people comparing Pacific Rim to Godzilla because Pacific Rim is really, when you break it down, the third movie in a trilogy that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Because the first movie is the kaiju showing up, the second movie is the first Jaegers and building a successful attack plan, and then the third movie is Pacific Rim when the Jaegers stop working so well, and we have to, like, you know, find a way to survive. Like, that's... The Pacific Rim is the third movie in a trilogy that doesn't exist.
May I also say that I'm really glad they didn't try to pull some bullshit, like, trying to make the plot of that movie into three movies, because that would have been awful. I just... Ugh.
But Pacific Rim, I think that you could have made a really good trilogy, but the problem is I don't think the box office would have ever been good enough to make it to the second movie. So
I kind of enjoy that we finally got something that hit the ground running and didn't have to spend forever setting up the premise. So, I don't know.
I just with this Godzilla movie, I was we talk about Pacific Rim, was pretty much in the same seat as I was with Pacific Rim with this Godzilla movie, where I was like arms gripping onto the, like, cheering and just getting into it. Like, I can't remember the last time I've done that for a movie other than Pacific Rim.
That was definitely not
me. Pacific Rim I had to go see in a real theater. This I got to, like, I will say, like, folks, if you can see a kaiju movie in a drive-in, go see a kaiju movie in a drive-in, because drive-ins have nice giant screens and you're outside, so when Godzilla shows up on that screen, it is very impressive. When you are sitting there looking up at Godzilla.
In retrospect, it really didn't help that my theater had crappy sound quality.
Oh, you need to have great sound quality with this movie. The roar is incredible.
God, the sound was really important in this film.
There were a lot of really cool moments, too, where they used...
Hey, maybe that's why Nick didn't get into the mood as much as we
might
did.
Might have not been.
Shitty sound.
Like, there were little minor things,
there's
like...
There's an argument for that.
It might be, but there's a lot of people who I tend to trust agree with me, so I'm not...
Oh, no, it's, I think you'd still have all the same problems. Like, I think you would be coming to us saying the same number of things you didn't like about the film.
But you'd be more hyped about it.
But I think you'd feel more positively. You'd be more positive about the film, like, in your gut. Like, you'd still be mad about every single plot thing that you didn't like. You'd still be disappointed with every single thing that you didn't like. But you'd be more hyped up about it.
That's probably true.
That's just me. And yeah.
Well, this was our a special episode.
Wow, we just spent 50. It's really good that we split this off, because not quite an hour, but almost an hour talking about just this one movie.
Right? Do we want to read the letter, or do we want to wait until our actual episode?
No, we got a letter from Archimize before this episode earlier today, but we're going to save that for the mailbag on Sunday.
Because honestly, it's a question or probably going to spike off another 10-minute discussion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Final ratings.
I got to go to work tomorrow.
Yeah. Final ratings on the movie for everybody? Thoughts?
Solid A-.
I'd give it a C+.
I'm gonna give it an A- as well. If I had to give it a star rating, I would say 3.5 out of 4 stars.
Yeah, that's where I'd go too.
Yep, 2 for me, 2 stars.
Oh. This was a fun episode.
And we all recommend you should go see.
Yeah, go see it. If you haven't seen Godzilla yet, do it. Give your money.
It's worth your time.
Yeah,
good cinema. It's
something that should definitely be experienced on a large screen. Like, don't wait for this to come out in video, because everything with a giant monster is more impactful when it's giant in front of you.
Hear, hear. Get out and see it, folks. Although, if people haven't seen it yet, they're not going to listen to this.
This is true.
So really, thing was...
By the way, folks... If you want to tell us what you thought about Godzilla,
yeah,
or anything else, go to nerdandtie.trhonline.com and click on the contact form and let us know. We want to know what you thought about Godzilla. We want to know what your opinions were, and maybe we'll read them on the show.
Except for
our next regular episode.
Except for Mikey. You know who you are, Mikey. I don't want to hear your opinion. Go clean the cat box.
I don't know who you are, Mikey.
Clean the cat box,
Mikey. I'm the one
who
actually checks the inbox.
What?
Okay. With that.
Good Lord.
Unless anybody else has something else they feel the need to say. Nick, I know I cut you off earlier. I don't know if you had the completed thought.
No, I'm good.
I'm still gonna yell.
Okay.
I'm still gonna.
Are you good?
I'm still gonna yell. It's gonna send us back to the Stone Age, probably drunkenly at conventions in the future.
Oh God!
That's what I'm gonna do.
The arrogance of man is thinking that this episode is now coming to a close. I was and forever shall be Trey Dorn.
I am potentially still Professor Fur,
and I'm Nick Izumi.
And we just re-recorded that because we managed to screw up our outros. You all have a good night.
Peace.
Remember, you can always subscribe to Dirt and Tie using Stitcher at Stitcher.com. You can download their app from both the iOS store or the Google Play store, and it is the best way to keep up